Okay.
We'll chant the invocation. Om Sahana Vavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavati Tamastuma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. We'll chant chapter 2, verses 1 to 5. In Swamiji's book, it is 63 page. Sanjaya Uvacha. संजय उवाच तं तथा कृपयाविष्टं तं तथा कृपयाविष्टं अश्रुपूर्णाकुलेक्षणं अश्रुपूर्णाकुलेक्षणं विशीदन्तमिदं वाक्यं विशीदन्तमिदं वाक्यं उवाच मधुसूदनः उवाच मधुसूदनः संजय उवाच तं तथा कृपयाविष्टं अश्रुपूर्णाकुलेक्षणं विशीदन्तमिदं वाक्यं उवाच मधुसूदनः श्रीभगवानुवाच श्रीभगवानुवाच कुतस्त्वाकश्मलमिदं कुतस्त्वाकश्मलमिदं विषमे समुपस्थितं विषमे समुपस्थितं अनार्यजुष्टमस्वर्ग्यं अनार्यजुष्टमस्वर्ग्यं अकीर्तिकरमर्जुन अकीर्तिकरमर्जुन श्रीभगवानुवाच कुतस्त्वाकश्मलमिदं विषमे समुपस्थितं अनार्यजुष्टमस्वर्ग्यं अकीर्तिकरमर्जुन क्लैव्यं मास्मगमपार्थ क्लैव्यं मास्मगमपार्थ नैतद्वैयुपपद्यते नैतद्वैयुपपद्यते शुद्रं हृदय दौर्बल्यं शुद्रं हृदय दौर्बल्यं त्यक्त्वोत्तिष्ठ परन्तप त्यक्त्वोत्तिष्ठ परन्तप क्लैव्यं मास्मगमपार्थ नैतद्वैयुपपद्यते क्षुद्रं हृदय दौर्बल्यं त्यक्त्वोत्तिष्ठ परन्तप अर्जुन उवाच अर्जुन उवाच कथं भीष्ममहं संख्ये कथं भीष्ममहं संख्ये द्रोणं च मधुसूदन द्रोणं च मधुसूदन इषुभिः प्रतियोत्स्यामि इषुभिः प्रतियोत्स्यामि पूजार्हावरिसूदन पूजार्हावरिसूदन अर्जुन उवाच कथं भीष्ममहं संख्ये द्रोणं च मधुसूदन इषुभिः प्रतियोत्स्यामि पूजार्हावरिसूदन गुरु न हत्वा हि महानुभावान् गुरु न हत्वा हि महानुभावान् श्रेयो भोक्तुं वैक्ष्यमपीह लोके श्रेयो भोक्तुं वैक्ष्यमपीह लोके हत्वार्थकामांस्तु गुरुनिहैव हत्वार्थकामांस्तु गुरुनिहैव पुञ्जीय भोगान् रुधिरप्रदिग्धान् पुञ्जीय भोगान् रुधिरप्रदिग्धान् गुरु न हत्वा हि महानुभावान् श्रेयो भोक्तुं वैक्ष्यमपीह लोके हत्वार्थकामांस्तु गुरुनिहैव पुञ्जीय भोगान् रुधिरप्रदिग्धान् we'll take up that question. Can anybody read out what the question was?
What has been judgment?
Is
it possible to be
non-judgmental?
Yeah, is it possible not to be
judgmental
at all?
So what is the answer you thought about? Anybody?
First of all, we need to understand the term destructive.
First of all, you need to understand?
The term destructive. So in the literal sense, you had destructive people down the ages, like Ravan and Hiranyakashipu, for whom Vishnu himself had to assume the form of Ram and Narsim to destroy them. Hitler was destroyed by the Allies, and today we have the terrorists whom nobody seems to be destroyed. So when things go beyond reason, even the gods have no choice but to use force to destroy destruction. On the personal level, we have destructive forces within ourselves to deal with, and then we have destructive forces in the other person that could affect everybody around. So these destructive forces are negativities in a person, who is pessimistic, unhappy, overcritical, unreasonable. So to counter this, we had Lord Krishna himself who came and imparted the knowledge of the Gita in order to destroy these traits in a constructive manner. We need to remove the destructive processes within ourselves through this knowledge. Where the other is concerned, we need to reason out and try and make them see their own negativities and what it is doing to them and others around them. I'm not sure how far we could succeed, as after all, we also have our own imperfections. It is difficult for another person to come around to seeing his own negativity, as it is for ourselves also. Sometimes I think one needs to be stern, and if one still does not come around, it is best to ignore and pray that good sense will prevail. After all, we do not have control over anyone else. Where judgment is concerned, we are bound to make judgments. In fact, our very lives, going by the theory of karma, are based on judgment. However, I do believe that we cannot form a judgment unless we know the whole picture. For those who are very near and close to us, like our children and husbands, yes, I think we know well enough to come to some sort of judgment.
Okay. So how does a constructive person, I think you have really dwelled upon a lot of things, but this particular thing about how does a constructive person not get affected by the destruction caused by destructive people around. That was the first, in fact, primary question was that. Then all the other questions came up.
So I was not able to answer it for starting and thinking of various things. One, I feel that a person becomes, we become destructive from the basis of being selfish. And selfishness at some point comes from our own insecurities, which leads us to be, you know, one versus another, to be less giving. So when we reach the stage of being destructive, it's almost like a bull in a china shop. You can see that eventually we will harm ourselves. But going to how a constructive person does not let it affect themselves, I found it very difficult to answer because it was me forming a judgment, and then when you step back and you think from a point of humility, what gives me the right to judge another human being without going there full stop? Like even the examples you took, Hitler was a product of the way he was treated, as was Ravan. Ravan started up being one of the most intellectual human beings that was, you know, there in our scriptures. It's very hard to keep peeling the layers to get to the root cause. So that it's hard, like, if you keep peeling the layers, you either get into helping the other person not be destructive, or realistically in today's day and age, you have to find a way to stop. So I'm still unable to answer, how do you stop being effective? Because it's the mundane, it's the everyday things that affect you more than the bigger picture. Because when you're being, I think when you're being intellectual, the bigger picture is easier to handle, because you know, you sit and you dwell upon it and you realize that it's a very small piece of your life. But it's the everyday, the little woodpecker, that's the tree, that's the little things, the little niggings that affect, at least they affect me more than the bigger picture. So I have no answer. Please.
Anybody else?
The only way I feel you can avoid a destructive person affecting you is seriously concentrate on something which gives you pleasure. I mean, wholeheartedly, just put all your energy into something which you feel you're good at, I mean, whatever it might be. Because only when you're totally distracted by something which you're so engrossed in that you can, I mean, that's the only way I feel I can get out of. Otherwise, that constant nagging behind, you know, that somebody might have said one thing and gone away, whether he meant it, not meant it, how much he meant it, but because we feel, oh, he's so dominating, he's so destructive. I mean, first of all, how do you decide a destructive person? That is also judgmental, according to me. But it's affecting you, so you would consider that person to be destructive. Because somebody, he might be destructive to you, but I mean, you might feel he's destructive, somebody else might feel he's not, or she might feel not. So, I mean, that again is judgmental. And how do we judge unless we think we are superior? I mean, some sort of superiority comes that even then I start judging. But it is very human for us also to judge. I mean, you meet a person, you automatically start judging. I like him, I don't like him. No, this is wrong with him, this is, I mean, without even thinking, we start analyzing and ripping apart that person. I mean, might be it had a bad day and you like upset and it's taking it up to you, but that's the reaction you are getting from him. So I feel in that whole thing, we also do feel that, okay, we are better, that's why, I mean, not intentionally, but are we becoming superior for ourselves? I mean, I'm confused to a large extent. I'm totally confused. But the person is affecting me, but might not be affecting somebody else. So why is it that happening? Something is something that triggering inside me. So how do you decide who's a destructive person? Is my first question back to you.
We'll discuss that. Did you think about it?
No.
Okay. See, first of all, when
just
we talk.
One minute. A person thinks they're helping somebody, I mean, that's what I want to figure out very desperately, is because either nobody goes on a road if you see somebody, you're not helping somebody. But you decide to help somebody if you feel that person gets suppressed. Because they feel eventually maybe they'll be able to dominate that person or they'll be able to get something out. I mean, it's with a selfish motive.
No,
I feel mostly, if they can, they get a selfish motive or they just give it. Or they don't, they let the destructive person feel.
So, if the person, if someone is helping someone,
somebody is helping you against the destructive person, considering you are the weaker person.
The victim,
someone's
helping the
so-called
victim. From
the
destructive person,
it could be from the motive. It's only from the motive, or they just let you deal with the situation.
In other words, you're saying, unless they have some something, some axe to grind, they will not come forward to help.
Are we talking about like a general situation, or are we talking about the destructive people acting against, say, if I was a victim? Are we talking about a general situation?
General and both.
Both also.
Even, see, it could be something that is happening at the total level out of which you are a part. Something could be directly affecting you, like how Duryodhan was destructive to the Pandavas. Right? So, there may be a scenario where somebody is so destructive to you. We are discussing both. It's in the sense, whatever may be the case, whether you are a part of the whole set of people who are being treated badly by a destructive person, or the whole focus is on you. Somebody is doing some injustice to you.
Well, I think judgment of the action is definitely important. Without judgment of the action...
How do you not get affected? That's the first question. Then we'll come to the judgmental round.
From the point of view of the victim, let's say I'm the victim. I was talking about a general answer. But supposing I'm the victim, and there are people who I feel are destructive, and they're out to destroy me, then I would probably try to work on myself to prevent myself getting affected. Reading books, meditating, even just doing pranayama. Sometimes if I'm meeting the person, I would probably do a jump in my mind. Immediately it works wonders. It actually works. And so I would do things like that, which are small means to keep yourself intact, assuming that I'm very affected by the people out to harm me. And from that state of mind, then I would try to make my analysis and judge the action and protect myself from the action.
I would try and analyze why that person is doing that to me. That's from where that is coming, from the person. And if I find no answer, I mean, maybe there's something I have done. I mean, I would also analyze that, self, chintan, what you say. And if I find no answer, I'm clear. So then, it's something which is within that person, which he has to sort out for himself. And something I cannot do anything
about.
But
that person is very happy.
I don't know.
I don't think that most destructive people are actually
they're not happy.
They wouldn't be destructive.
It's like
no matter what he got, he never seemed happy with what he got.
You might not be content with what you have.
But you won't be happy.
I think it's a lot of reasons to be happy. Otherwise, they wouldn't lash out. What is the need you have to hurt another? Unless you hurt him.
There's something there within them, which is making them do that.
But then, they're definitely strong. And what I said, which you all disagree, is seriously happened with me.
Since Mami broke this question into two parts, I think that's a good way to address it. Like, one part being addressing ourselves as the victim, and one being on a more general view. You would analyze where that person is coming from. So that's your intellect being satisfied. But how is that helping? Like, how is it helping you deal with remaining unaffected?
It helps you understand the situation better. It helps you understand the person's behavior
what's
better.
Going on in another's mind. But the action.
So wouldn't that hurt become more?
Intellectually justified. Because you see the bigger picture, not justified, but you see where it's coming from.
that's where it does get
the maybe personal to you. It's something which the person is going through, maybe because of other circumstances, and that it's not it doesn't personalize the issue with
Very often I've seen someone is say rude to me or whatever. There are times when the cause stems from me. I mean, you know, very often it happens like you. So,
but
you,
let's
you
see the
understand
cases
that.
When one is in terms of behavior when you're meeting, that is one aspect. But not when there's an action, and when you read about this in the papers, where the action actually harms a person in terms of say, business and children and all that. That hurt is not something where
justify the person's
action. Yeah. Then that action is wrong. Understanding where the person is coming from helps, definitely helps. But then action has to be taken as an almost like the palas and the columns. That action has to be taken to protect. Over here, the columns have taken away everything and they don't really want to give what is the small bit which they were entitled to, the pandas. In other cases, one reads of business families also where, you know, similar situation.
The same
situation is happening. So then action does need to be taken to protect and safeguard. Action does need
to be taken. You have to come to that frame of mind to be able to take an action. I mean,
rather than let everything go away, why? If it's legally or rightfully,
talking about stressed out.
One can be a martyr and say, okay, everything goes. But the children have
a martyr to an extent. I mean, they've not reached that level of,
I think till things affect you, whatever is affecting you, till then you have to look within and see if something is affecting me. Whatever, somebody is doing something negative. There are so many times when people come in front of you which are negative and it doesn't affect you because maybe that person doesn't matter enough. You know it's nothing. Like supposing somebody might come and say something really mean to you, but you know in your heart of hearts you've not done something nasty and you don't deserve this. So it doesn't affect you. And whereas at the same time there are some other people who come in front of you who you might have some lot of linkage with, and when they harm you it really affects you. So I think at least like what I feel is that when you see that when is it that I'm getting affected, and if I'm getting affected then I have to look within as to what is affecting me. Is it just is it something which is stemming from me, as in some, you know, I mean that means I either still have attachment or I still have
very
an
often
ego,
is your ego
or I watch
ego
people,
that
yeah,
gets
is it
hurt
ego, yeah, sometimes when my ego is getting hurt or something that okay I've done this and I feel that that person should respond to it. But where is that effect? The effect will come in me only if there's some requirement from my side.
Yeah.
And to realize, I feel like when you realize that, I'm not saying that it won't come or it doesn't come. It does come, but at least when you realize that, you stop blaming. Like it helps you deal with the negativity of the other person by not blaming the other person at that point and realizing that, okay, this is my need also, that I wanted praise here or I wanted my ego to be satisfied here, and that's why I'm getting hurt or that's why it's hurting me. So maybe it doesn't take away the negativity of the whole situation, but it helps me deal with it affecting me less. So I feel whenever anything is affecting me, I have to look within.
No, but I have a question, like just the thought of a person suddenly gets you into a frenzy, I mean, then what happens? I mean,
that gets you into a frenzy.
Yeah, so, I mean, what happens then? I mean, you know, you do not even see that person, you know. You just, like, suddenly randomly.
So it's about you.
It really also depends how invested you are in that so-called destructive person. If it's somebody who is your innermost circle and it does matter whether it's a love hate relationship or love, whatever it is. It's like how close to your inner orbit is that person.
Yeah, your connection basically, your relationship with that person, right? Basically. It does matter.
So let's go step by step. First question, can you read out the first part? What just the first one.
How does a constructive person remain unaffected by the chaos caused by a destructive person?
Okay. Now, who is a constructive person? Who is a destructive person? A destructive person is one who is self-centered and selfish, egoistic, lacks love, only interested in fulfilling his likes and dislikes. He will go to any extent, even causing destruction around, to find, to fulfill his own likes and dislikes. This is a destructive fellow. Who is a constructive person? A constructive person is one who is interested in self-development, who considers himself as a part of the totality. So he doesn't live merely to fulfill his likes and dislikes. He works for the welfare of the whole. He is a contributor, not a taker, but a giver. Right? Whatever comes as an appreciation or reward of his contribution, he takes that and gets satisfied in that. He is somebody who has love and no expectations. This is what a constructive person is. So a person who is interested in his self-development has focused on his body, mind and intellect and developed at all levels. He has developed his intellect. He has the thinking ability, assessment, judging, discriminating capacity. Also, he has developed his emotions, purified them, he has love. And at the physical level, he is somebody who takes up responsibility and dynamically functions in the world. He is a constructive person. So when we talk about destructive people causing destruction and getting affected by it, what we are saying is, whatever destructions that are caused by destructive people's actions can affect you at the physical level, can affect you at the mental level. Now, first and foremost, for example, if you take the example of heat and cold in the world, when the temperature rises or decreases beyond a certain level, body does feel the heat or cold. Physical level, it can cause harm. But mental level getting affected is in your hands. It's not because of the temperature rising up or down. So when we talk about constructive people not getting affected, we are talking about not getting affected mentally. Like Srija, right? Your name? Shweta, sorry. Who is Srija here?
She's coming.
Okay, I get confused. So Shweta said, it's me who gives the power to affect me. In short, that's what you said. That's what I'm saying. So affectation at the mental level happens because of the lack of intellectual development. For example, I'll give you one more practical example on a day-to-day basis. You buy a car. In India, the roads in all the places have not come to a high standard. You still have a lot of potholes. But some of the best cars have now come to India. It's available. So you've got the best cars, one of the best cars. You're traveling in the car, but it's the same road which has a lot of potholes. The car does go in and come out, but you're not affected. I'm talking about at the physical level also. Why? Because the car has an excellent suspension, shock absorber. Similarly, in each one's life, what is the shock absorber? The inner development, self-development, which is that development of the intellect, purification of the mind, and removing the sloth at the physical level. If that inner development is there, to that extent, the external things remain at the external level and not affect you within.
Guruji, what happens when the person is so, like Shweta was saying, that the same thing could be said by two people. Some people are able to get through it and some are not.
Some people are able to?
They credit you and some are not. You know? So
it all depends on the level of your growth.
Yeah.
So in fact, if you did not have a value for what I say,
then it doesn't really matter to you. But you had a value for what Shweta said.
No, but that's
then you will suddenly get affected by Shweta.
Is that because of intellectual development or
it's because
the level of relationship?
Not just level of relationship. It's a lack of self-sufficiency at a certain level. See, I have a self, for example,
the
loss of a pen, which happened to be Reynolds pen, will not affect you. But if it is a Mont Blanc pen, may not affect you, may affect somebody else. Somebody else may get affected by the loss of Reynolds pen itself. You understand? It depends on which level of development you are in. We are not saying you will not go through affectation at all as you are progressing towards the goal of self-realization. But small little things that used to affect you before will not affect you anymore. But you must continue your progress to such an extent you reach that state where nothing affects you. That is a Sita Prajna. When we are going to study the second chapter, you will see how a Sita Prajna behaves. A man of steady wisdom. We have not reached that. I am talking about when, like for example, a person like Krishna went to discuss with Kauravas, right? He was sent as a messenger. But Duryodhan tried to capture him and imprison him. But that did not affect Krishna mentally. See, in the book Vedanta Traitors, in fact, I don't know how you people are placed, like how busy you are. Simultaneously, we could do that book also. Usually what Swamiji recommends is we do that book first and then come to Gita. If you want, simultaneously we can do that also. In the very beginning of that book, Swamiji discusses these three states of mind, three conditions of mind, not states of mind, three conditions of mind. He gives the example of a cone lying on its apex, cone lying on its side, cone lying on its base. Three examples. Cone lying on its apex, can it lie? Can it stand? It can, provided it has support, not otherwise. So he calls that condition as a state of restless equilibrium. State of mind which is at restless equilibrium. Cone lying on its apex means the point is so narrow, thinking just me. It's not broad, it's just me. Everybody around me should cater to me. If small little things don't cater to me, then I go berserk. So if everything goes as per my likes and dislikes, I'm okay. But that's not how the world is designed. Million things will go wrong. It will not be catering only to you. There are people who pray for rain, the farmers. There are fellows who want to spend their time outside because they fix a wedding on the seashore. They are praying for no rain. So who is God going to satisfy, right? So another fellow is not that self-centered, is relatively self-sufficient, but he is like cone lying on its side. In the sense, by himself, he will not be agitated. But somebody calls up and says something that is like tapping the cone, which is lying on the side. It will oscillate. The oscillation can be for a day, for a week, for a year, for the whole life. Right? The one is like cone lying on its base, who is not self-centered, whose ego is diluted, who works for the welfare of the world, like I said, Lokasangraha, and who has got a strong base in knowledge, who has developed his intellect, and has just pure love, no expectations. And that fellow, whatever may happen, he cannot be shaken. I'll give you one more example, then I give up. Another example is a plant whose roots have not gone deeper. Therefore, it has not become strong. And there is a powerful wind. It uproots that plant. But a tree whose roots have gone inside and the tree has become so strong. Strong wind is not able to uproot the tree. Similarly, when we are not rooted well in the truths of life, things affect us. When we are rooted in the knowledge of life, nothing can affect you. So it's directly proportional to the level to which you are rooted. That's why we say, get rooted. In fact, Vedanta says, be focused only on the roots. The fruits will come. So, how grounded you are in knowledge. And to get grounded in knowledge, you need to gain the information, which is the first level which we are doing right now. And the second level is you are supposed to think, reflect, which is what you should have done at home. Or you, I suppose you are doing at home. And then constantly go through that again and again. That is the third one, Nididhyasana. So that you get established in it. Until you get established, you need to pull yourself away from the non-thinkers. Because if you little bit go and associate, just little bit you study here and then afterwards you are all the time with them, and you are bound to be thinking like that. Or not think. You understand? So till you get established. Once you are established, you cannot get influenced. You will only influence people. So, it is directly proportional to the extent you are grounded in knowledge. If a person has knowledge, the laws of life, he has understood, and he lives by that, he cannot be affected. He will not have any expectations from anybody. A friend can turn a foe can turn a friend. But he is not sitting and waiting, oh, she is my friend, she might turn an enemy tomorrow. He is prepared. It won't come as a shock to him. A person who lacks knowledge, he is not prepared. To him it will come as a shock. A person who has knowledge, it will not come as a shock at all. Now, having said that, physically there are things to be corrected. The fact that he doesn't get affected mentally, he is much more qualified and strong enough to physically tackle it. And when he tackles it physically, it is not as though in the very first instance itself, he will be able to sort out the issue. But he has patience and perseverance and continues, and he will not give up till he sorts it out externally. All this we will be studying in the second chapter, believe me. It's coming when Krishna starts from verse number 11. He talks about this. A wise
the
person doesn't
never
grieve.
Manage to sort it out ever. So much perseverance and everything.
No, they came back. They claimed the kingdom. When they claimed the kingdom, they tried Sam, Dhan, Ved.
Then
nothing happened. Then there was only solution to fight. Then they went on that, and then they, in between us, of course, Arjuna got confused, but fortunately Krishna was there and he surrendered to Krishna. He revived him. They won the battle. They claimed it, right? They reclaimed it back. That is only, see, who can really sort out issues? Only one who is able to keep himself calm inside. When there is fire at home, if you are also jumping and you do not know what to do, you will first run away. Your child could be inside the room. Not that you don't love your child, but you do not know. And then you say, hey Baba, my child is inside. If you are calm, collected, then you know what to do. How to sort it out? First you will go and switch off the mains. Then you will make a phone call to the fire department. Then you will try to, you know, get children and all these people out. There are methods which you will do because you are calm and collective. And that calm and collectiveness will come only to the extent you have gained the knowledge. Otherwise it doesn't come. Gaining the knowledge is possible from information, reflection, etc. Other one is reflecting on your experiences.
No, but what I am confused about is that final recourse is every time the final recourse to anything comes to violence.
No, no.
In the sense of Mahabharata.
Final recourse is what?
When there is no solution.
It's when not when there is no solution. Yeah. That becomes the solution. It's like
exactly.
Somebody who is so adamant. There are many cases which has been decided not on the battlefield, much before that. There are few, let me tell you, if there has been 5 or 6 terrorist attacks in India, for example in a year, if at all, that means in my opinion, thousands of terrorist attacks have been avoided. Okay? That is through intelligence report and the swift functioning of our forces and being alert, proactive and all that stuff. Yes, in spite of all that, still there may be 5 or 6 terrorist attacks that you cannot prevent. That's exactly what we are saying. Prevention is better than here. Right? So you live the hygienic lifestyle so that you avoid disease. When there is a breakout because of other reasons, it might come to you also instead of you leading a hygienic life. So that's what we are saying. This doesn't mean that you don't lead an hygienic life. You have to recourse is only violence. We are not saying recourse is only violence.
There's no
so you have to do it. What can you do? Yeah. Not that you are interested in the violence, but that's thrusted on you. So we never said that a constructive person, for example like Krishna, will not accept the war when it is thrusted on him. He is not interested in war. But when it is thrust on him, like Shakespeare says, be cruel only to be kind. Sometimes, huh? That is very important. He says, sometimes one must be cruel only to be kind.
But also, the same question, there are situations where, say, one is not involved in something, total outside, an absolutely unfair situation is happening. Say, let's say we are in a state of knowledge where we can judge the action and not the doer. Then doesn't one step in? One steps in to protect the victim to some extent. Whatever is there in one's capacity.
Yeah, I would go one step further. It's not just to protect the victim. It is to establish righteousness.
Yeah, establish righteousness.
Protecting the victim is a, of course, it's a good thought, but it's a very
narrow.
Further, if you go deeper, it is to solve the very issue itself, so that nobody else in the future gets victimized. You understand? Solve it. See, I can come and teach Gita here with an attitude that what I will get out of it. Right? I can get some following, etc. Or I can come and say, oh, Gita must be understood by everybody. The second thing. Third thing is, this is a subject which has helped me and I have a nature to talk on Gita, so I go and teach. Not that I want to resurrect anybody or anything like that. They may in the bargain get resurrected. I'm doing it as a duty. That's even more subtle. Right? So, in the bargain, all the other things may come, appreciation and everything. But that's not my motivating factor. So, these are three ways in which people can function. Right? Selfish, unselfish and selfless. So, like what you said, when you are in a context, firstly, it is your primary obligation to make sure that you remain unaffected. Which means you must become strong. Remember this example all the time. I can't think of a better example. When you travel in the aircraft, first thing they tell you, to help yourself at times of emergency, the oxygen mask will fall. First you help yourself put on the oxygen mask, then you can help the children and everybody else, adults, elderly people. Why do they say that? Only if you are with the help of the oxygen mask become normally able to breathe and stabilize yourself, then you will be able to help people. Right? So inside, stability comes first, and that is only through knowledge. That's why we say this knowledge is very, very important. Unless you are, let's say for example, you send your children to the best of the universities and they gain all the skill and this, but for whatever pressure, due to pressure, whatever it might be, they go mad. Just example. Of what use is the Harvard degree or any degree? They've gone mad now. So if they did not have this knowledge, lots of people, extremely wealthy families, I don't want to take names and it's not necessary also, only son committed suicide at the age of 20, 21, 25. For what? Some jilted love or something like that. Isn't it? Many stories we've heard. The inner stability is lacking. Not able to absorb the so-called shocks provided in the coming on his way. So what use is all the wealth and all the education and all the glamour? Nothing. Right? So, the point is, first and foremost, inner stability. How does it come? Digested knowledge can only bring that, nothing else. And that is what the scriptures give. I'm not saying only Vedanta.
Example of the tree is very nice. It is true because strong winds will always come in everybody's
life. Yeah.
Every single
yes. And that will come when you're least prepared.
Yeah.
only thing you can do to counter it is to strengthen yourself,
yes,
not to change
absolutely.
The environment.
That's why Swami Ramtita says, your only obligation is to be self-pleased, self-poised and self-sufficient. Don't blame the world. World will behave like that. Suddenly you self-poised, calm, composed, serene. That's your obligation. First, maintain that stability within. Through digesting the knowledge. And that's why we are studying Gita. Not because we can become intelligent in the Gita so that you can give one lecture every day at home, everywhere, wherever you go. Not like that. Firstly, to make yourself strong. Isn't it? So that mental stability, to the extent you have achieved through the knowledge, to that extent you will not be affected. And to the extent you are not affected, to that extent you will be capable of setting it at the external level. And since he has no personal axe to grind, he has no time frame, before this I need to finish this, so that he gets agitated if it doesn't finish. He will also function within a time frame, but for whatever reason it gets extended, he is not affected. There is no personalization. So basically, if you want to answer this question in one word, it is knowledge. Bina knowledge, you will be affected. With knowledge, you will not be affected. That's how the whole Gita starts. I'm telling you, when in the 11th verse, chapter 2, when Krishna speaks, he says, wise people do not grieve. They don't grieve for anybody. Why they don't grieve? He starts explaining. That's how the Gita starts. So, you have been speaking words of wisdom, Arjuna. But wise people do not grieve. They don't grieve for those who have come and those who have gone. That's how the verse, first verse of Gita, the Lord Krishna's reply, advice to Arjuna starts. How does this happen? Because they have knowledge. They have understood how this world functions, the various laws, how the mind functions. Like somebody said, from where he or she is coming. That's knowledge. Assessment. So that is the first answer. Constructive people do not get affected because they have knowledge. They are like the cone which has a broad base. Okay. Second question. What is it? Is it possible to be non-judgmental? Is that the next question? Firstly, should we judge? Should we assess? Yes. But should we be judgmental? No. We need to differentiate between the two. What is be judgmental? What is judging? Even when you say judging, it may have a negative connotation. I take an assessment, objective view. You must assess. To the extent you do not assess, you will go mad, you will be stressed. In the stress management programs, we emphasize this. Swami Ramtita gives a beautiful quotation. He says, all grumblings tantamount to, why a lily, not an oak? Oh, why a lily, not an oak? You expect a lily to be like an oak, and you will expect an oak to be like a lily or something else. This is happening because you have not made a basic assessment. If you come to Delhi, weather of Delhi, there are two things. One is called as climate, the other one is called as weather. Climate of Delhi is what?
Extremes.
Terrible cold, terrible heat, all that, right? But weather on a particular day may be beautiful. Similarly, for an individual also, the climate may be good, but weather on some day can be bad. Climate may be bad, weather on sometimes may be good. It's okay. That's how life is. So, assessment, lack of assessment leads to undue expectations, and undue expectations will not be fulfilled and you will be left with disappointments, and those disappointments are nothing but stress. They give you stress. So, when you are living in a family, you must have some basic assessment about yourself, about your husband, your wife, your children, your servants. In fact, many places the question is about servants. Because basic assessment, right? The mentality of people, studying the nature of people who come from this part of the world, that part of the world, general assessment. And one more assessment is, my assessment could go wrong. Therefore, I must be open also. In judgmental, this openness misses. I go by my perception, I become judgmental. Stephen Covey, in his book, I don't know which book, I have read few of his books, Principle-Centered Leadership and all the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. In one of the books, he gives this example. I think he talks about himself or somebody else. When the gentleman lost his wife, he has 2 sons. They had gone to the funeral and they board a train after the funeral, local metro train. And in the train, everybody is quiet, calm, minding their own business, reading newspaper, whatever, but not disturbing anybody. It's absolutely quiet. When this gentleman boards the train with his children, 2 sons, they run here and there and make so much noise. Looking at that, one of the passengers say, "Hey, are they your children? Can't you control them? Can you not tell them to keep quiet? They're behaving so badly. Can't you see that?" So immediately this man replied, "Yes sir, I agree with you. I'm in fact thinking how to tell them, how to put it across to them, because we're just now coming from their mother's funeral, my wife's funeral." Immediately that man said, "Let them be. Don't tell them anything, just let them be. We don't have enough data. With the available data, I have assessed. My assessment can go wrong." Right? 99 out of 100 times it may not, but once it might, or maybe 10 times it might. Right? So if I understand that, then I won't become judgmental. Like she rightly said, in judgmental, being judgmental, there is an element of supremacy, there is an element of ego. Who am I to judge anybody? I must assess to have a proper relationship. If there has to be proper relationship between husband and wife, there must be proper assessment. Between parents and children, there must be proper assessment. Between students and teacher also, there must be proper assessment. Otherwise, the relationship will not be good. Every relationship must have proper assessment. And not fix your relationships based on it. Develop expectations based on it. Then you become judgmental. Then definitely you will have problems. That's why we say assessment is a must, but not become judgmental. Then you are not being open. See, you met somebody 10 years ago. Now when you meet, that person could have changed completely. Right? Now, if I become judgmental, then what happens? So when you are part of a gossip session, you form opinions and you dwell over it without developing the intellect, you form judgments about people. You have not met that fellow. You've already got a strong opinion about that fellow. So whatever he may speak, this is what people do, you know. I don't know how many of you have seen that play or read the book of Shakespeare, a play called Othello. Iago pollutes Othello's mind so much that anything that Desdemona will say or do will always be looked at suspiciously by Othello. His gossip sessions does that to you. You form opinions about people. Same thing, media. You know, they powerfully put forth. You kind of already crucify that fellow before he is being given any sentence by the court. What is that? Being judgmental. Without even going to foreign countries, America, Indians have made their own opinions, formed their own opinions about them. Maybe they have also done the same thing about us. I don't know. Isn't it? It's an indulgent kind of a culture. On what? How? How did you know about them? You've read some books. Somebody who traveled, he has been traveling with his glass. So, you can take it, but with a pinch of salt. I can go travel abroad and come back and write. But am I not viewing whatever I view with my glasses? So, by watching movies, by discussing with people who have been there, I come to conclusions. What rubbish. You understand? When you go there for the first time, maybe for what you know may be totally different. I'll tell you, Swamiji runs an academy called Vedanta Academy, where we've all graduated. A lot of people from different countries also come. So one American came from Washington. He has heard about India stories when he told me, like, there is snakes everywhere. Cows going everywhere. You know the stories that he heard. So he said, when I landed, I'm so surprised because his whole expectations was different. You understand? This is being judgmental. And that's wrong. There, an element of ego is there. So when judgment, you remove the ego and closeness, closed-mindedness, it becomes assessment. That should be there in life. Otherwise your life will go for a toss. So, Krishna also has made some assessment about Duryodhana. Pattern of life, if you see, especially somebody whom you know, you've been moving with so many years, from pattern of their lifestyle, observation, you know this fellow is moving in this direction. Based on that, you base your relationships. And still, they followed Dharma. You understand? They said, Sam, Dhan, Ved, everything they tried. Nothing worked. Then finally, only war. Does that answer the question, or is there still any part of question
can
left?
Can you just repeat this question from judgment to move?
Being judgmental means blowing the part as a whole. You have observed something and you are fixing that, that is his character. You met somebody on a very bad day, let's say. He is so agitated on that day and therefore he is behaving in a particular way. And then you decided this fellow is like that only in your whole life. I am telling you, I know. There is an element of ego and supremacy. You don't judge anybody. Like I gave you another example. You could have changed. Valmiki, before he became a sage and wrote this Ramayana, he was a bandit. If you had formed judgments about him, you would have never expected him to become a saint. King Kaushik became Sage Vishwamitra. Isn't it? He was a king. Then he became a sage. So therefore, never fix your conclusions. The best quotation in the context comes from George Bernard Shaw. Somebody asked him, who do you think is the most intelligent person on earth, according to you? So immediately George Bernard Shaw has said, it seems, my tailor. Because he's the one who takes fresh measurements every time I go. I could have lost some weight, I could have put on some weight. Every time I go, he takes fresh measurements. Once you become judgmental, you don't do that. Is that okay? Question? Okay. let's get to chapter 2. Chapter 2 is entitled as Sankhya Yoga, the Yoga of Knowledge. We find this word yoga after every chapter, which means episode. It's a science. In the first chapter, Arjuna was totally confused. It is showing to us how a man of Arjuna's caliber falls. The state of Arjuna's despondent condition, despondency. In the last verse he said, I will not fight. Isn't it? He said, completely became distressed. He threw his bow and arrow. He was overpowered by complete sorrow. When a person is full of something to say, if you in reply say something, he cannot hear anything that you say. Can you have conversation with somebody who is talking? You cannot. You can only have conversation with somebody who is available, listening. So till now, there was no possibility of Lord Krishna saying anything. They have to be completely exhausted. That's why when you go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, first you speak, they allow you to speak. I'm not speaking this from an experience. Don't imagine that I've gone to somebody. That's how it should be, anybody for that matter. Many people when they come to talk to us also, first allow them to speak. They have certain things to say. And since they are disturbed, they may not be able to come to the point straight. So they'll say so many things. In that saying so many things, they would have said their problem also to you. They would probably think they have no problem, but the fact that they spoke to you so much, you will be able to see what exactly is their problem. So Arjuna was just blurting it out. Just allowed Arjuna's mind to open up. And now it's, having spoken, kept quiet. Now such people require what? Such people require knowledge. They need to be given a direction in life. So the next chapter is the Yoga of Knowledge. Now this chapter has 72 verses. It's one of the big chapters actually. Even the last chapter, 18, is also very big. Now this chapter has 72 verses. Every chapter, people like Swamiji and Swami Chinmayananda and few others, they have done their own research and they have split that chapter into further topics. It's not part of the original, but they have done their own research and they have split that into further topics. This is to convey us the thought flow. It is a conversation that is happening between Arjuna and Krishna, and there is a thought flow. If you want to understand the Gita in its depths, then you need to understand the whole picture, the whole thought flow. You cannot just like that take up chapter 6 and read one day, and then come to chapter 2, and then go to chapter 7, and then 9. You can't do that. Systematically you must go, then you will see the thought flow. So the chapter has been split into 6 topics by Swamiji. It is there in the book if you see. The first topic from verses 1 to 10, he calls it Arjuna's despondent condition. See, if you go and read somebody else's book, you might find the topics different. Right? But end of the day, their purpose is to give you the thought flow. Arjuna's despondent condition from verses 1 to 10. Then verses 11 to 30. In fact, Bhagavad Gita strictly starts from verse 11 of chapter 2. A lot of people start their commentary only from chapter 2, verse 11. Because that's when Krishna starts giving the sermon of Gita. Verse 11 to 30, Lord Krishna talks on the indestructibility of the embodied Atman. Then verse number 31 to 40, the emphasis on action, your duty to act. Third topic.
Verse number 13 to?
31 to 40. It's there in the book, in the beginning. 31 to 40 is your duty to act. The importance of action, is spelled out. And then from 41 to 44, the fourth topic is desire-ridden actions. Action could be desire-driven or desireless. So in 41 to 44, he is talking about desire-ridden actions. And then from 45 to 53, desireless actions lead to self-realization. Self-development and self-realization, both. Then the last topic is description of an enlightened soul. This is what is called as the portion of Sthita Prajna. Sthita Prajna means, Sthira Prajna means a man of steady wisdom. Somebody who is well established in knowledge, and because of that, he doesn't get affected. So Arjuna wants to know from Lord Krishna. He requests Krishna to paint the picture of a man of perfection, a human being who's attained the pinnacle of perfection. So Krishna paints the picture from verse number 54 to 72. This is the topic. Sthita Prajna, Sthira Prajna. So now Arjuna had spoken and he had kept quiet now. So either Lord Krishna should say something now or somebody else. Whatever Arjuna has to say, he has said, and he's kept quiet. So interestingly, this chapter begins with Sanjaya speaking. Remember the context. Sanjaya is reporting to Dhritarashtra about what is happening on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So Sanjaya starts this chapter. We'll read that verse number 1. Sanjaya uvacha tam tata kripaya vishtam, tam tata kripaya vishtam, ashrupurnakulekshanam vishidantamidam vakyam uvacha madhusudanah Sanjaya uvacha tam tata kripaya vishtam ashrupurnakulekshanam vishidantamidam vakyam uvacha madhusudanah. Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, to him, here refers to Arjuna, to him who was thus overcome with pity. Remember, I even pointed out to you in the previous chapter when Arjuna says, even though these people, the Kauravas, whose intelligence has been overpowered by greed, do not see the sin in killing one's own kinsmen, we who clearly see, why not we refrain from this war? And in that verse, I told you, Arjuna's extroverted mind is able to see the blemish in Duryodhana, but he is not able to see his own blemish. What is that? Attachment to his own people. Right? Arjuna is not able to see, but Sanjaya as a third person is able to see. To the extent we are deluded, we cannot see. When the mother is so infatuated with the child, even the detrimental actions done by the child will not be seen by the mother that way, because the mother is conditioned, isn't it? So she will not be able to see. As a third person, you are able to see, but she is not able to see. It's very interesting. So, to him who was thus overcome with pity, means Arjuna is not able to understand that he is overcome with pity in this verse till now. Later on, he understands that, and that's when he surrenders. In fact, this portion also could be categorized as Arjuna Sharanagati. Do you know what is Sharanagati means?
Surrender.
Sharana means surrender. Charana means feet. Shri Krishna Sharanam Mama means I surrender to Shri Krishna. Charana means feet. I fall at your feet means you say, I'll fall at your charan. Ram charan, then you say, feet of Lord Ram. So, this portion is where Arjuna surrenders to Krishna. When does that surrender happen? When he realizes this, that he is overpowered by pity. Here he doesn't realize that. Here it is Sanjaya as a third person able to see and is saying this. So he is saying to him who was thus overcome with pity, the whose eyes were filled with tears. Whose eyes were filled with tears. Physical condition is being explained. Then who was agitated and despondent. Who was agitated and despondent means mental and intellectual condition of Arjuna. From the physical point of view, from the mental point of view, from the intellectual point of view, from all different points of view, he is in total shambles. Are you with me? Having said this, he says one more thing. What does he say? Madhusudana spoke these words. If he had left it till now, Dhritarashtra must have been in heaven. Because Apara, finally, Arjuna is confused now, he is going to leave the battle, and for sure, he is kept quiet. But Krishna is there, not going to leave the scene, not going to allow Arjuna to leave the scene either. So Sanjaya says, Madhusudana means what? Killer of demon Madhu, which is Lord Krishna. Madhu means what? Honey. How do you call your husband or wife sometimes? Honey. Because he or she is speaking lovely things about you. When the same person starts talking sense. He or she is not so much honey. In the sense, when your ego is being catered, it is honey. Flattery. Somebody is flattering you. It's honey to you. So real honey, if you go like that and derive, is nothing but your ego.
I'm really sorry, this is going to be a repetition for everybody. Guruji, last week when we did the revision of chapter 1, you spoke about Rajasic renunciation. And you mentioned that that's what Arjun was doing towards the end. Like when he was confused.
He was interested in the kingdom. Yes.
On the basis of Rajasic renunciation. And now we're, like in this verse, we're saying Arjun was overcome with pity.
Both the same. The difficulty here is he has to overcome that pity. Rather, he had allowed the pity to overcome him. You see,
so pity
is a weakness in Arjuna.
Pity was the tool you used towards Rajasic renunciation. Like that
is, he is not conscious of the pity so far. He is genuinely thinking, he is not a hypocrite here. Please remember, here when we said Arjuna is a Rajasic renunciate, we did not say that he is a hypocrite. He is not a hypocrite. He is not purposely putting up a show there. He is confused. He doesn't realize that pity has overcome him. The difficulty, some difficulty is there, which is to kill his guru, great-grandfather and all that. And he is trying to justify that with his confused intellect. So he is not, not realized yet. It's both same. Rajasic renunciation is because of this weak pity. So here, Madhu means ego. Is that okay for you? So Madhu means ego. Madhusudana means Krishna, who has conquered ego and who has also literally conquered a lot of egoistic people around. So Madhusudana.
It's interesting because
Madhusudana
is also the demon.
It is demon.
No, I mean now this other metaphor is very interesting.
Demon is who? There is demon sitting in every one of us, ego. There is Mahatma Gandhi, and I say Mahatma Gandhi, the self is also sitting. Whom are you feeding? You have two children. You constantly feed one fellow and don't feed the other fellow. This fellow will be emaciated and that fellow will be so fat. This is exactly what we are doing. We are feeding the ego. We have as friends who also feed our ego. Oh, you are the best in the world. Go on feeding your ego. So you keep them around you and you are in that delusion. You can't see anything clearly. So Madhusudana, Krishna, the knowledge will destroy that ego. Will destroy the delusion. Madhusudana spoke these words. So when he said this, Dhritarashtra must have suddenly thought, oh my God, I thought I can celebrate. But no. You understand? Even if Arjuna wants to leave the scene, what is this fellow have to start something? So then Krishna starts saying, we'll see those verses next week. Om Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.